embedded within our tradition is a reverence for the word, a respect for the opinion, and an encouragement to encounter those words, those opinions directly. And that's what we're going to do today. Since it's the summertime, people are feeling a little bit more relaxed, we can loosen our ties, we're going to encounter our texts, our sacred texts, directly. We're going to engage in a type of study called chavruta, which means paired learning. And in just a moment, actually, why not right now, you're going to be receiving, each of you is going to be receiving a source sheet. So you'll get a big stack. Just take one and let's quickly get them throughout the rows. Just take one and quickly pass it. I'm just going to encourage you not to look at it for just a moment. Today what we're going to study in chavruta, and this is how you learn in chavruta. In chavruta, you read the source aloud, because that illustrates a respect for the source. You read the source aloud with your partner, with your chavruta, and then you question each other over the text that you are studying. So I provided for you a few guiding, a source as well as guiding questions. But let me set the table. Before you look at the sources, let me set the table. Here's the background. Today we're going to study the story of the scouts, which we heard from our Benot Mitzvah, as well as we heard from Rabbi Guzik. Let's revisit the story for a second. The Bnei Israel, the Israelites, arrive at the borders of the Promised Land. They're encouraged, they're excited, they've received the Torah, and they're about to fulfill their destiny. A destiny that was laid out to them over 400 years prior, a destiny that was promised to Abraham, and that destiny was, of course, that there would be a numerous nation and they would settle in the Promised Land. They're on the border of the land, they're on the cusp of fulfilling their own destinies. They send in scouts to observe the land, to see what's going on. What's the land like? And after 40 days, the scouts return. And the report that they issue changes the tenor of the entire narrative. It changes the entire turn of events. Because Bnei Israel, the Israelites, who had been excited to fulfill their destiny, no longer, because of this report, want to enter the land, and they rebel and they rise up against Moses and the leadership, and they say, we don't want to conquer this land. Perhaps it would have been better for us in Egypt. God, after hearing this complaint, hearing this rebellion, punishes the people. And he issues an edict that declares that anyone alive for the generation of the Exodus would not be permitted to enter the Holy Land. Rather, they would need to wander in the wilderness until a new generation rose up, and only would that generation fulfill the Israelite destiny of settling the Holy Land. Now this turn of events, this all of a sudden this change in tenor, the foundation of which is found in the spies' report. In other words, without the scouts' report, perhaps Bnei Israel would have just gone into the land and fulfilled their destiny. But something so troubling happens that it changes the entire narrative and changes the entire turn of events. And the question is, what happened? What was the sin of the scouts? So what I'd like you to do is to each of you find a chavruta. Find someone right here in the congregation to learn with for just a moment. And what I'd like you to do is on page one, I'd like you together to read aloud the verses from the book of Numbers, the story of the scouts, and then answer the questions that are provided for you at the bottom of the page. Now it's respectful for the text to actually read the text aloud and then to read the questions aloud and have discussion together. So I'm going to give you each of you just a few moments just to read the text, answer the questions, and then we'll reconvene. So go ahead, engage in your chavruta now. Let's hear some voices. You're supposed to, this is like a Beit Midrash. You're supposed to yell at one another, all in the study, the spirit of Torah. If anyone has a question, just feel free to raise your hand and I can try and get to you. Again, read the text with your study partner, with your chavruta. Okay. Not everyone had a chance. Hopefully you had a chance to finish. But let's just turn our attention here. We'll summarize. The reason that I just... The text only comes alive, truly only comes alive when you encounter the text directly. In other words, if you say, it's wonderful to listen to rabbi's sermons, and we love to talk, but you truly become an owner of the text. It becomes your tradition when you encounter the text directly. So I just want to encourage, the reason that we're engaging in this type of learning, chavruta learning, is to encourage you to supplement what you hear from the Bima with what you see with your own eyes, what you feel with your own hearts, what you think with your own heads, and what you feel with your own soul. That's the tradition. That's Jewish tradition. Okay, so let's encounter the text. Why did the scouts encourage the Israelites not to attack the land? Let's have a volunteer. What was the gist of why the scouts didn't want to? Go ahead. Right, exactly. They're just too big. The people there are just too big. And not only that, what about the land? What about the land? What does it do to its inhabitants? Right, it devours its inhabitants. Wow, some land. Okay. Now, does Caleb, does he agree? This is the second question. Does he disagree with the scout's report on the land? Okay, so most of you say yes, he disagrees. Some of you say no. So for those of you who say no, why doesn't he disagree?
He says it's there, but we're going to overcome it.
Excellent. In a way he disagrees, in a way he doesn't disagree. What he disagrees with is the assessment. He doesn't disagree with the facts. He doesn't offer counter testimony. He doesn't say to the spies, no, you're mistaken. It's not a land where we are, it's not a land that doesn't devour its inhabitants. He doesn't challenge their observations. Rather, he finds their assessment problematic. So what was the sin of the spies? What was the sin of the scouts? They didn't have any faith. Okay, excellent. No faith. Anyone else? Any other sins? Anyone else? Pardon me? Fear and lack of faith. Fear and lack of faith. Okay, now turn over to page 2. I want you to see now how three commentators from three distinct periods, Neely Fox is a professor of Bible at the Hebrew Union College in Cincinnati. She's the first commentator I selected. Rabbi Menachem Mendel of Kutsk, better known as the Kutzker Rebbe, Rabbi Wolpe quotes him all the time. He was a leading Hasidic figure in Eastern Europe. And then the Zohar, which is the foundational Kabbalistic work, and that is written approximately in the 13th century. So look at these texts with your chavruta, quickly read them over, and answer the following the questions that are provided. Go ahead, we should read over, talk with your chavruta, read the commentators, and then see how these commentators look at the sin of the scouts. How do they see it? Is it a question of faith? Is it a question of fear? Perhaps something else. But read out loud with your chavruta, and then we'll reconvene. We encourage you to be quiet throughout the service. This is not the time, though. Now we want to hear a lot of noise. The rest of the time, there's no clapping, none of this, none of that. But now you can talk. There we go. Okay. Feel free to take these sheets home, discuss them over Shabbat lunch, talk with them, study them. But let's try and provide ourselves with a synopsis of these three commentators. Fox, Neely Fox, what does she say? What's the problem here? What did the scouts do wrong? Faith. It's a question of faith. The scouts lacked faith. This extreme display of faithfulness predicates God's ultimate punishment and is the basis for that ultimate punishment. In other words, God finally gets sick of the people and their lack of faith, and therefore God says, this generation, bereft of faith, is not a generation that's worthy of settling the land. What does the Kutzker Rebbe say? What does the Kutzker Rebbe say? You got to look deeper. Does he seem to be as critical of the scouts as Fox, for instance? No. He even says that what they reported is factually true, like we discussed before. What they said wasn't a lie, But somehow their truth was perverted by their own opinions, by what their own baggage, by what they carry personally to the table. Now the Zohar, what the Zohar offers a completely different reason. What's the Zohar's reason? What does the Zohar suggest that the scouts did wrong? They were misleading, they were what? False reasoning? What was their motivation according to the Zohar? What was their motivation? Their reasoning was incorrect, their reasoning was false. He even goes so far as to say, the writers of the Zohar go even so far to say as they were virtuous, which is not a characteristic that you heard that is commonly associated with the scouts. But the Zohar says the problem with the scouts was that they were of an old generation. They were so fixed in their ways of the way things were, the way things should be, that they were unable to make a transition. And their personal motivation to hold on to the situation at hand, to hold on to the present, to not encounter change, that caused the false reasoning, as you said. That was the reason that they provided this testimony. Because, and perhaps someone said it before, perhaps it was a fear of change. Something that rings true for all of us. How many of us are fearful of change? We all sort of cringe somewhat when something new is introduced. Even this format today, which is so untraditional for us here, is a little weird for us. It's a little weird to have a sermon delivered in this manner. I think that there's a common ground in the Kutzker Rebbe's opinion and the opinion of the Zohar. Again, the Kutzker Rebbe questions the faith of the scouts, and the Zohar questions the scouts' ability to make a transition. And that is that according to both of these commentators, both the Kutzker Rebbe and the Zohar, and even Fox, the testimony, the facts are accurate. But in each case, the facts are perverted and intruded upon by the opinions of the scouts. And as I actually read a Devar Torah this week from Rabbi Brad Artson from the UJ, and as Rabbi Artson discovers or claims that there is no wall between facts and feelings. They intermingle. There's no wall, there's no separation between your facts and your feelings. I'll give you one example that I can think of. Email. Think of email. And think of how many times you've been upset at an email. Right? That you get an email and you're upset at the email, whether it's at the office or in your own personal email account, and you read the email in such a way, you say that person was mad at me, or that you infuse into the email a certain emotion. And then when you encounter the author of that email, you find that the author, the person who wrote the email, intended it in a completely different light. They said, no, you misread it. But actually, you didn't misread it. You merely and simply put your opinions, your feelings, into the facts. There was no barrier between the facts and the feelings. Our tradition encourages us to be wary of allowing our facts and our feelings to intermingle. And it encourages us to take action to ensure that that doesn't happen. And the way that our tradition does that is it encourages us to seek help from a different source. The first negative of the Hebrew Bible, the first time that the Hebrew Bible says the words no, are the following. It is not good for man to be alone. Lo tov heyota adam levado. It is not good for man to be alone. In that instance, we're talking about a spouse, but let's read it a little bit more openly. It's not good to solely process something without bouncing your ideas off of somebody else. It's not okay just to infuse your own opinions into the facts, because what happens is a confusion. So our tradition tells us that we should seek help from other sources. Seek someone else to encourage you to bounce your ideas, your opinions, off of that person. Our Mishnah tells us, the Mishnah says to us, make yourself a rav, meaning get yourself a rabbi, and acquire for yourself a friend, meaning find another person with whom you can talk with. Someone else with whom you can bounce your ideas and your feelings and your observations, who you can process all these things with. We all need help from the outside. And the way I encouraged you to study today in the Chavruta, that's an acknowledgement of the need of finding help from the outside. You don't encounter the text alone, but rather you encourage the text in partnership with someone else. Maybe you misread the text. Maybe you're looking at the text in a way that prohibits you from seeing another opinion. So let's go back to that Chavruta study. Whatever you decided was the sin of the scouts, we can all agree that they failed to see the truth objectively. And let us learn today what we learned in Chavruta study, the importance of bouncing ideas off of one another. That in Chavruta study, when you study in pairs, you talk with one another, you bounce ideas off of one another. So let's always be in Chavruta. Always be with someone to give and to receive, to ascertain an outsider's perspective. Always be in Chavruta to have someone to shed light on a situation and to help all of us see the light of truth. Shabbat Shalom.